Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Movies and Mixtapes podcast. I'm Matt Walters, and I'm here with the vivacious Molly Mo. What up?
What up? Hey, guys. I'm ready to go with another podcast episode with our first week of romance.
We're very giddy today.
Yeah.
We were struggling to even start it because we're just Mr. and Mrs. Chuckles over here.
I just suddenly pictured us in like the faces of Mr. and Mrs. Potato Head from Toy Story.
Wow. I feel like Mr. Potato Head is a big fucking mood. He's always angry about something, and I relate.
Because his mustache has always fallen off. Of course he's angry.
I love the bit in the third film where he's at a tortilla wrap.
Yeah.
So dumb. Alright, yeah, look.
Fucking hell. Right.
Today, we're going to be kicking off our episodes dedicated to the romance genre by talking about a very special piece of cinema. So this week, I made Molly watch a film called Before Sunrise, directed by the prolific Richard Linklater, in the year 1995, starring Julie Delphi and Ethan Hawke.
Two very beautiful people.
I mean, it's a romance film, so you need two good-looking people. And it stars Julie Delphi and Ethan Hawke. It's a really great film about two strangers who meet randomly on a train, and after a conversation, they kind of sense that they're building a sort of connection. So completely on a whim, decide to kind of spend the day together in Vienna. I feel it's a very spiritual film, and the dialogue in it is like next level. Like, what this film really is just a man and a woman having like increasingly intimate conversations with one another and kind of falling in love over the course of like 24 hours. It just so happens to have this absolutely like gorgeous Vienna as a backdrop. And the film is very much a slice of life story. It's very spiritual, as I said, deeply romantic, kind of philosophical, and I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this film.
Yeah, I've got a lot of great things to say about this film. I mean, you can probably guess already, but I absolutely loved it. I thought it was beautiful, and I thought it was just... It's hard to do romance in an original way, and I think it is so cleverly done. Whoever wrote the script, whoever, you know, decided to cast the way they did, all of the decisions were the right ones.
It was written by Linklater, who directed the film, but he knew that he needed like another perspective, like a woman's perspective on it, so he got a writer, a woman he knew called Kim Krasan, in to kind of get the dual perspective of the film.
Yeah, well, it really pays off because you can tell that it almost feels like an actual conversation. Like, I know that's how scripts are meant to be, but it feels so incredibly authentic that you don't really realise that it is made up. It kind of just feels like you are actually there with them.
The dialogue is definitely like god tier of this film. Like, he makes his dialogue seem just very natural, which is difficult. So like every time I find a script that makes their dialogue seem so naturalistic, I am just flabbergasted by it. Let's delve into the questions.
Yeah.
Question one. You kind of covered it. Did you like it? And can you give it a rating out of 5?
Okay, yeah. So obviously I really, really liked it. I've seen it sort of advertised or I've seen it around before, and I never thought to watch it because I just thought it was a cheesy 90s rom-com. I kind of judged it on the basis of it having Ethan Hawke in it, but it completely surpassed all of my expectations. It's just a beautiful piece of cinema, and it is so incredibly romantic. It completely runs with the idea of romance and smashes it. I did give it 4.5 stars, but I'm kind of tempted to go for 5. But I don't like just giving out 5 stars. Like, I've only got about between 5 and 10 films in the whole world that I've given 5 stars. So I think I'm gonna stick with 4.5. But it's really like teetering on the edge.
Nice. Yeah, it's a definite 5 for me. Like, as I mentioned last podcast, every film I've given you so far has been a 5 for me. But I'm completely the same. I hate being like a bit of a 5-star slut. I'm like, I'm very... Because you're like, when you say like a film is one of your favourite films, it's like your stamp approval on it.
Yeah.
And you don't want to just give that out.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, because also I've not seen a lot of films in my life compared to you and like other really, you know, nerdy film lovers. So I don't want to just give films that I've seen 5 stars and then have loads of films in the future that I want to give 5 stars.
We started off strong with Almost Famous then.
Yeah,
that
I mean...
film must have really connected with you.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Almost Famous is fantastic. But I mean, Before Sunrise is so very close to being a five star.
This is going to be a hard one this week, but I have to ask you all the same. What was your favourite scene?
Oh, this is really hard. I know. Okay, so my favourite scene is where the sun's beginning to come up and they are just sort of walking around the streets and they can hear some music, I think, coming through a window, and they walk past it and sort of look into this this room or this house. I think it's in some sort of like monastery, and they can just hear the music and they look at it. And then once they turn to sort of look at each other after they've been like listening to the person playing the piano, they take a mental picture of each other. And I just thought that was such a beautiful scene, because if you've not ever done that before with someone, I'm sure you've probably wanted to do that with someone before. And I just think it took my breath away how moving that moment in the film was for me, because it completely encapsulated all of the feelings that they had been having for each other, or, you know, building over the course of the film. And then in that one moment, it was like they both recognized and understood the feelings that they had. And yeah, it was really sad as well, because obviously they had to take a mental image of one another, because they weren't going to see each other really after the sun came up. And it was sort of that point in the night / early morning where everything's starting to wake up. The birds are awake, but the cars aren't, sort of the roads aren't busy, and it was just
everything's
that
a bit ethereal.
And you just sort of like, because I've walked around Liverpool where I went to uni after a night out at sort of like 4 or 5 in the morning, and that time of day is such a magical twilighty hour where you really do feel like the only person in the world. And I just thought,
I had that this morning in Cardiff. I couldn't sleep, so I went out of the house with my earphones on at like 4 or 5 a.m.
It's such a magical moment, isn't it?
It is. And like, I think at this point in the film, it's like, you know how you're like completely yourself when you're alone and you have no filter? I think at this point in the film, even though they've known each other for such a little time, they're like that.
Yeah.
They build up this such like deep, intimate spiritual connection over the course of a day.
Yeah.
I think the film encapsulates that very, very well.
I thought it was just a really moving moment. I just thought it was stunning. That's the word I would use to describe that scene, is stunning.
That's a really cute scene. It's definitely a scene that could get lost with all the flashy dialogue that goes along, because it's a very soft moment in comparison.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's really, really gorgeous. That's a really beautiful scene.
What's your favourite scene?
I think that caught me off guard. I completely forgot about that. A great scene. I think one of my favourite scenes is where they're in some sort of cafe or bar, and they do fake pretend phone calls to their like best friends.
They do
fake calls that they're gonna have to make to their best friends the day after to explain where they've been and how and why they had to cancel their plans with one another. And it's like adorable, and it's used very cleverly in like a screenwriting sense to basically let the other characters hear what they think about one another, like quite honestly, because they pretend like they're talking to a different person. And it's very cute. Like, she's like, oh, I didn't like him much at first, but I knew I was gonna fall in love with him as soon as I got off the train with him. And it's very adorable, and it's very funny, because the other pretends to be like, it's when Julie Delphi pretends to be like his American friend, and she picks up the phone and is like, oh, hey, dude.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you met a girl? Is she fit? Oh my God. And it's just, it's very witty, and it's very warm.
It is. And I also think you wouldn't be able to pull off that kind of scene with maybe like a couple even a few years older than that. I just think they are so clearly sort of like late teens, early 20s, and they've got that.
It's quite naive.
Yeah, it's naive and silly. And I just, I really love that scene as well. I think that's a great choice.
But yeah, as I said, like, very hard question this week, because this film kind of feels just like one scene. Like, it just feels like a big extended version of one scene, because the film's always building and growing on the relationship as they do. And yeah, it's just honestly, like, the film is just one amazing scene after another. Like, I love this, the first talk they have on the train about him seeing his grandma's ghost through the sprinkler.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Kind of how they...
I think that's the moment when she's like, oh, he's kind of interesting.
Yeah, and I love Hopeless Romantic in Me, loves their first kiss scene on the Ferris wheel.
Yeah.
It's really adorable. Yeah, just great scene after great scene.
It was.
I thought you were going to say the palm reading scene. That's what I expected.
Yeah, no, I kind of thought of that. And then I was like, actually, no, I really like the scene where they take the mental image because it hit me, like, in the feels.
Yeah, good answer. Good answer. All right, the genre-specific question. Well, it's kind of like two different questions that I drafted for this. First off is the completely, like, the one that just first came to me. You can probably guess what it is. The first off is, if you were, picture it, if this was you, in what city would you want to spend one night talking into the early hours of the morning with some stranger?
Which city?
Around for one night and just spend like a day, like really, okay, like just getting to know somebody?
So I don't know. So when I was watching this film, I instantly had a really deep connection to it because I absolutely had the best time when I went to Vienna with...
You've been to Vienna?
I've been to Vienna.
I'm so jealous.
I went with Izzy when we were interrailing after A-levels or something like that, and we were in Vienna for her birthday. And it was the one part of the trip where we decided to sort of like spend a bit more money because it was her birthday and it was a special occasion. And I've got such fond memories of my time in Vienna, and it was like sort of early summer, so it was beautiful, and we watched the sunset from this like tower restaurant for her birthday. So I loved watching Vienna through these lovers' eyes because it kind of reinvigorated a love that I already had for it and made me feel really melancholic about when I was interrailing. So I don't know, I really loved Budapest because so it was another part of the interrail.
Oh yeah, I didn't expect it to be, but it can be a city that you've already been to.
Okay. Oh, okay.
So we can make three questions if you like. If you can do it around a city that you've been, a city that you haven't been, and then I'll ask you the third one.
Okay. So city that I have been, I would probably say Budapest because it was just the most magical part of my trip when I was interrailing, and one of the best nights of my whole life. We were with a bunch of people that were staying at the hostel with us, and we all just sat in a row watching the sun come up, and it was beautiful. It had that sort of magical, no one else is awake sort of, yeah, it was just magical. So I would probably say Budapest.
Love to go there.
Yeah, maybe a city I've not been to, I would say, this is really hard, you caught me off guard.
Did you miss my joke?
What did you say?
I said Cardiff.
Cardiff! Yeah, right. Oh, okay, maybe Edinburgh, because I love One Day, and I would love to climb up that
Edinburgh's
hill.
Edinburgh's such a beautiful city. I've never been, sadly.
I mean, I could have said any city from around the world, so it's hard, because I want to say, like, Rio de Janeiro or something like that, but I feel like...
I think anywhere with history would be a really good...
Yeah, yeah.
Somewhere you can see the age, so I think Edinburgh's a good shout.
Yeah, Edinburgh for a city that I've not been to, and then Budapest for a city I have been to.
You're just making me realise how little places I've been. I really need to just save up money and, like, just fuck off for, like, a year.
Yeah.
Paris is obviously, like, a great...
Oh, well, of course, Paris, the city of love.
That's the kind of obvious go-to. I'd love to go to, like, Iceland and Greenland, but, like, if we're talking urban cityscapes, I mean, Venice is a good shout.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
Yeah, Venice, Rome, somewhere like that.
Very nice. It's got to be, to be honest, it has got to be a European city, because you don't get that sort of exciting fleetingness that you would, because I guess if you go to a city like Bangkok, you're sort of just in Bangkok, whereas if you go to Vienna or, you know, Venice or anything like that, you're sort of usually on the move because of how close it is to loads of other cities. So it has that sort of...
Definitely couldn't be a US city as well.
No.
Imagine Before Sunrise, like, set in somewhere like New York. You'd get stabbed.
Yeah. that would not be as romantic. Someone would get sepsis. What was the second part of the question?
The second part of the question is a little bit more interesting. So, Before Sunrise is the first film in a trilogy, which, you know, as I kind of mentioned it, but without having seen the other two sequels, where would you sort of take Jesse and Celine's, like, story next? Like, Linklater always said that Before Sunrise was a sort of, like, litmus test for how you view romance, and I just wonder where you think, or how you would have liked the story to progress. I'm sure I'll make you watch the other two. I actually haven't seen the third, but so we could watch that together, but, like, the second one.
Okay.
I kind of told you how long it's set between each, but, yeah, like, where would you...
Oh, that's a really good question. I mean, one of the things that I've actually made a note of to say is I really, really loved the way that they ended the film. So they didn't sort of swap numbers and go, oh, we're going to talk and we'll figure this out and we'll be together and all this kind of stuff. It was authentic for them to be like, no, the whole time that we've spent this night together, we knew that we're not going to see each other after this, and it's really unlikely that we'll probably ever see each other again, which is why it was so magic. And I liked that rather than being like, oh yeah, let's just, you know, come and see each other, they were like, right, let's meet here at this time. And it was sort of, it was like so far away in the future that it was sort of doable, but close enough that it was sort
That seems really cute.
Yeah, so
where they're like, oh, this spot 10 years, they're like, 10 years, 1 year. And they're like, 1 year, 6 months.
Six months, yeah.
they kind of hold this like no bullshit, like, kind of thing. Like the scene on the boat where they're just like, let's not swap numbers, like, they get rid of all the fake niceties and like, oh yeah, we'll talk, we'll meet up like next, blah blah blah.
Yeah, I really like that part of the character development. So I would probably go along the line, like, even though I would love for them to just be the perfect couple and be together forever, I probably wouldn't do that just because of the way that they speak about sort of being realistic about those sorts of things in the film. So I would probably get them to see each other 6 months later and sort of have it around Christmas time, sort of like wintry, and they sort of walk around Vienna and they're in coats and it's all cute and they're wearing sort of like bobbly hats. And for the first half of the film, I'd probably do a very similar sort of thing where they're just sort of like so excited to see each other, having a catch up. And then I would probably, about halfway through, make it sort of suddenly feel quite awkward between the two of them because they don't have the sort of excitement of just meeting anymore. And now they've sort of told each other what they've both been up to. And they kind of, they're like, oh, like, what do we do here? Like, do we go for a shag? Do we keep on talking? Do we have dinner? Like, what, like, this is a really stupid idea, why did we even do this in the first place? And then I don't know, and then I'd maybe get them to have like some sort of like really cute, like, prolonged romantic scene of them like I don't know, like spending time together and like just not being in a city, like being in a room or being in sort of like a domestic environment. And then I'd probably end it with her saying that she's like met someone else, and the other person that she's met actually lives in the same city as her. So
it, drama.
And then he's kind of like, oh yeah, to be honest, I've met someone as well at home, and I just haven't, you know, let it happen because of us. And then they just sort of go, okay, well, you know, this was really nice, we had a great time together, but you know, maybe we'll swap numbers this time, but we probably won't see each other again. Is that really pessimistic?
Little storyteller.
Sorry, I really got into that.
Very. Wow, that would be so depressing.
Yeah, no, I just, as much as I would love to say, if I was the director, I'd take it in a direction where they,
pessimist.
You see them, you know, 5 years later and they've got kids and they're married and they're so happy. I just think for the way that the characters are written, it just wouldn't make sense for that to actually happen the way that we all want it to.
This is an easy question because there's only really two of them in it, but who were your favourite actors / characters / performances?
Well, I
hard choice. Honestly.
Yeah, oh, really hard choice. I just love Julie Delphi. Like, she is just, she just is an angel. She just truly looks like she is carved from marble by the gods. She reminded me so much of my housemate from second year called Melina, she's Cypriot and German, so she had that sort of like European sort of like bluntness and that sort of like dry wit that sort of European humour has, but you know, really, really smart and really, really interesting and sort of goofy but in a nervous way. I really like that part of her character.
That's a good way to describe it.
Like that sort of like, you know, when you're like, oh, just a bit like nervous, so you go a bit goofy. I just thought that was just beautiful. And I also liked that you see her character sort of thaw out a little bit throughout the film. So she's a little bit colder at the beginning and then obviously towards the end, not so much. But I just thought it just felt like a real person. I think that's the thing with this film. It doesn't really feel like a film. It just feels like you've met two people.
It's very natural.
Yeah, but obviously Ethan Hawke's character is great as well, and I really liked that, you know, he had all these like sort of pessimistic ideas on the world, and then, you know, Julie Delphi's character is sort of this sort of smart and driven person that just gets on with it.
And they have a very good back and forth.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, but I thought Julie Delphi's character was just, well, Celine was just so fleshed out and so thoroughly written, and I was really...
It's very odd because... At times, she seems completely, like, ethereal, but at the same time, she is an incredibly grounded character.
Yeah.
Which is bizarre, and when writers can make that happen, it is so just wonderful to watch.
Yeah, it was just so authentic, and her character just really felt like a person.
It's very clever in the way it does that. The film constantly feels like it's building layer upon layer on top of these characters until... Like the book I recommended you, like one day, like although that's set over 20 years and this is only one day, you feel as connected to these characters because you just feel like by the end of the film you know them so well.
Yeah, and the topics that they talk
about, all these stories.
Yeah, the topics that they sort of get through when they're getting to know each other are the sort of like fundamental topics. I guess, you know, your opinions on spirituality, the afterlife, death, the future, money. Like literally everything, it sort of covers the stuff that you don't really even realise what your opinion is of it until
you start talking about
it.
Yeah, it's kind of, that's a good way to describe the dialogue in it. It's very stream of consciousness.
Mm.
Like it feels like it's their thoughts just coming out of their mouth, like completely unfiltered and honest and just blunt and very on the sleeve.
Yeah, definitely. I just thought it was that. Yeah, the screenwriting was just exceptional. It was so fantastic.
Linklater's always been very good at dialogue. You can see that in like School of Rock, and you can see that in Boyhood, which I want you to watch as well. He's always been very good at it, and he's got a cool animated film called Waking Life, which is very, very philosophical.
Yeah,
I might make you watch it.
I think that's the thing that surprised me about it. It was surprisingly philosophical. I wasn't expecting that.
It seems to kind of be everything at once. Like it's naturalistic, it's existential, it's philosophical, it's optimistic, it's pessimistic. Like we talked about this with Almost Famous. Like it's one of those films that when it really boils down to it, at its core, is just about life, which makes it so honest and such like a pure and easy watch.
Absolutely.
Because it's just, you inherently connect with everything and it's really powerful.
Yeah, I don't know, obviously quarantine, we can't see our friends, we can't, you know, go out and meet new people, and it just made me really sort of like have that deep sense of like both longing and like I was sort of saddened and really happy by watching it, because it made me sort of long for that connection where you first meet someone and you're like bouncing off each other, and it's, you know, and you sort of slowly peel back the layers of yourself and become more natural. So it made me sort of long for that feeling, and, you know, like just human life and existence and like just seeing people face to face, which is something that we are all missing a lot at the moment, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, my only sort of like source of connection in this way is going to be through films like this, because I can't see anyone face to face, really. Yeah.
The power of cinema. Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I knew you were going to love it. I knew, like, it felt like some of these bits were like fine tuned to appeal to you. And I knew, as soon as we birthed this concept of a film podcast, I knew that this was going to be on the list of films I wanted to show you.
Yeah, I'm really glad you made me watch it. I'm so glad. It's one of those films that I think is going to stick with me for some time.
I think it'll be interesting to rewatch this film at different parts of your life.
I feel like this film
hit a lot differently when we were a bit older. Mm. It might look more cringe than it does now, or it might seem more like kind of poignant.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, so next question is, how would you have directed it differently?
I don't have a lot wrong to say about this film. I think it's next to a perfect film. But the one thing I probably would maybe have tried, I would have just had the characters kiss a bit more. I would have...
Oh, yeah.
I just think, like, they kiss sort of... They have their first kiss, and then after that, like, they kiss a little bit, but I would have really sort of... I don't know. I would have had them kiss a lot more. That's the one and only thing I would have changed, I think. Just more kissing.
We asked it for Horror Week. What was your favourite kill of the film? What was your favourite kiss?
Oh, I think the kiss at the end when they're saying goodbye. that yeah, sort of like sweet. Desperate gasp of a last kiss, and they just don't.
Yearning. Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was beautiful. What nice. About you?
Okay. Well, the first kiss is always a big one. The one on the Ferris wheel is just, you know, very deeply romantic. He's kind of stuttering, and she's just like, "You want to kiss me, don't you?" And he's like, "Mm-hmm." So she kind of like initiates it more. It's very sweet, but like even like in like softer moments, like before they get their palm read outside of the like cafe, they share like it. He's like, "I've got a secret to tell you. Come in." Like,
oh what? Yeah, that kiss is so cute.
Yeah, more kissy kiss, please.
More
kissy
kiss.
We want to see more attractive people kiss on screen.
Yes, please.
All right, next question. Next question. What was your? Okay, so the next question would normally be, what was your favorite song from the film? But there's not a lot going on in the soundtrack here, or even like the score department. Like besides dialogue, this is a very much diegetic film. Like with the sounds of the city, you know, traffic, birdsong, carnivals, like bar, cafe sounds, with like a few exceptions here and there. And I think that plays into the film's like kind of whole natural and kind of, you know, grounded aesthetic. But I guess let's talk about the kind of music that you'd put in the film. Like if you were to give this film a soundtrack, like what sort of stuff would you put in there?
Oh man, that is a big question.
It is. It's just another excuse for us to nerd out about music.
I think I just my brain goes to like Velvet Underground, Nico, Lou Reed.
Oh yeah. Very very kind of subtly romantic.
Yeah.
It's not like inherently romantic.
Yeah.
But like very like kind of cool and like sexy. It's very 60s.
Yeah, that's, and I think with that in mind, there are two other songs specifically. I've looked on my Spotify playlist. Omar Apollo, Brake Lights. I think he's got a really unique sound. It's really romantic, but in an understated way.
Uh-huh.
I love his music. So if you want to check him out, I would definitely recommend it.
You've introduced me to him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good.
It's, and I feel like it would be good background music.
I'd piggyback that recommendation.
Nice, thank you. And then obviously, this song is just, it really hits different, and you love this song. It's Lovers Rock by TV Girl.
Oh, what a song.
Yeah, I think it's just so insanely romantic, and it's like that, it's got that delicious like youthful romance element to it.
Yeah.
And I think it would fit in really well with, I'm not really sure what scene in the film, but
yeah,
it kind of mirrors the vibe of the romance in
That's
the film.
True. That one was slightly nice. Yeah, it's hard thinking about music to this film because, as we said, it feels quite voyeuristic in a sense that like you're intimately like kind of spying on these two characters, and it's so natural, so you kind of feel like you're intruding a bit. And the film, as we said, is kind of one big scene, and it's like very natural. It's almost like you're not watching, even though it's like inherently cinematic. So yeah, that's a good, like, I don't know where like music would even fit in, because
yeah,
it's
I wouldn't even put it in the film. I would just make a playlist for the film to like mirror.
Definitely.
Like, you know how we make up other playlists depending on like what mood we're in? I would just make a playlist for the film to listen sort of after you've watched the film, to sort of keep that like that buzz, that buzzy like excited romantic feeling in the pit of your stomach.
Nice.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, shocker. Do you know what I'm going to say? I would definitely put some Kate Bush to
this. Oh, I knew you were going to say Kate Bush.
Like, there's one song on the Red Shoes album, which is called Top of the City. And it's very ethereal, and it's very urban, and it's very beautiful. And I think they would just kind of slot into the film nice.
Aww.
Plus,
it's Kate Bush.
It's Kate Bush.
And it's Kate Bush. Oh, actually, also, there is there's that scene in the film where they're in the record shop and they
The record booth.
And they like listen to the song, and I think it's like a bit more romantic than they were both expecting.
How did we not talk about that scene?
Yeah,
yet?
That scene is so beautiful because it's like the first sort
that
of like
kind of just,
it's like a bit of a game changing moment for them, because they both look at each other while the song's playing, and their eyes kind of keep avoiding each other because it's kind of a bit awkward for them, because they're stuck in this tiny cramped listening booth, and this really romantic song's playing, and they don't really know each other well enough to hold eye contact for it. But
that seems so good.
But I think the fact that they can't even look at each other just accentuates how much they do like each other already.
Yeah, it's like the only kind of scene in the film where they're not talking. They just shut the fuck up, and it's all glances and eye contact. And it ends up being one of the more like kind of romantic scenes of the film, because like they're kind of like stifling laughter a bit, because that's how we like move past awkwardness. And it's you describe it in a very well way. Yeah.
Yeah, I can't believe we nearly brushed past that. Bloody hell.
Yeah. What song would you play in that booth to a random stranger? Oh. Let's do that. Imagine there is someone in the world who has never listened to any song in his life.
Oh my god.
What song would you, if someone could only like listen to one song in their entire life, what would you play?
You can't make me choose this.
Kind of similar to the question you ask on your Keep Your Head Up podcast.
Yeah, my mind goes to Patti Smith. If I had to play an album, it would be Horses. But if it had to be one song, it would be the Jeff Buckley cover of Lilac Wine.
Yeah, amazing choice.
Yeah, thank you. What about you?
Bit of Nina Simone. Oh.
I've been listening to her today.
Honestly, like, as soon as you... That, I mean, even if they could listen to other music, like, that song would just ruin all other music for anybody. That's such a good song. I mean, I always say, like, I think the song everybody should listen to at least once is Running Up That Hill, because I think it's just so powerful. But there's a song I really love, which I introduced you to, like, ages ago, like, on the first playlist I made you. It's one of the most beautiful songs ever written. It's River by Joni Mitchell.
Oh, that song is gorgeous. Yeah. That song is absolutely beautiful.
It's just, yeah, we've gone for both kind of very somber, melancholic choices.
Well, yeah, I think if you're in a listening booth with a potential, you know, love interest, you're going to put something quite heady and sort of, dreamlike and romantic. Yeah. You're not going to put on, like, a bit of Metallica. You're going to put on something that's going to make them fall in love with you a bit more.
Bit of Joni, bit of Patty. Oh, what a combo.
What a combo.
See what we do for our listeners, Molly.
this is a very good episode in terms of music.
Yeah. Go listen to every song we've mentioned on this.
Yeah, literally all of them.
Go listen to Kate Bush. Go, just do it. Right. Last question. Would you recommend it?
Fuck yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
To anyone? To everyone?
Yeah, pretty much.
Nice.
Yeah.
Right. Well, yeah. I am going to pass over to you.
Okay. Oh, I'm so excited.
What film you're going to show me next week. And I have no idea. So I'm very excited to know what I'm going to
watch. Yeah. I love this film. I basically copied. So for my A-level media script that I had to write, I basically just tried to rewrite this. I loved it so much when I first watched it. Yeah, I've showed it to loads of people. It's by one of the most famous and, you know, actually one of the best directors around. Quentin Tarantino.
Oh.
Yeah, which I...
Oh, I know what it is now.
For obviously for Romance Week, you probably wouldn't pair Quentin Tarantino with romance, but...
It's written by him. It's not directed by him.
It's written by him. It's True Romance, starring Christian Slater and Patricia Arquette, and it is just phenomenal.
I'm very excited now.
Because even the romance scenes, they're fantastic, but outside of that, there's a whole other part of the story that is just so freaking good.
I'm so fucking excited. That film's been on my watch list for so long.
I can't wait for you to watch it. Yeah, I really love that film.
I kind of know how lauded it is, like, culturally. So can't wait to be in the inside of the gossip now.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
And it's got a fucking fantastic score as well.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
A score or soundtrack?
So there's like a score part from the very beginning of the film and the very end. Okay. And it's just iconic. I love it.
Much excite now.
Much excite. Very excite. I can't wait to watch and record the next one. But thank you for recommending Before Sunrise and making me watch it.
You're very welcome.
And thank you to everyone who has been listening. And I hope you enjoyed this episode. And I hope you guys go and listen to all of the songs that we recommended as well.
Yeah, most importantly, do that and then watch Before Sunrise. Or watch Before Sunrise and then listen to their songs and be like, damn, they should be at all. They've got the same vibe. All right, thank you. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.